Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive, positively into a beautiful weekend where I always like saying this when the Orioles, we should call Cincinnati, Cincinnati. The Orioles are going to Cincinnati, and it's sort of weird, you know, it's sort of weird. We're in the conference with the Bengals all these years, and I've been to Cincinnati a million times and think about Riverfront Stadium and all that, but I've only been in the new ballpark like twice, had a beautiful hot dog there, and we're going to get a whole weekend of that. I wore my SPF 50, and I went down to Fadley's, and I know Luke now understands Fadley's and the legend, a deep fly ball from Camden Yards. I was down at Lexington Market. We're going to be giving away the Pac-Man scratch-offs next Friday when the Orioles return against the Arizona Diamondbacks. And my wife said, where do they go after they go to Cincinnati? I'm like, Washington. So they sort of are halfway home here most of next week, but certainly over the weekend. We'll be there 2 until 5. My thanks to Liberty Pure Solutions as well as Jiffy Lube Multicare for putting us out on the road. Also, big thanks to our friends at Curio Wellness and Foreign Daughter. I have my I'm a Blunt Person shirt on to make you giggle and titter, and the 25th anniversary documentary is out. They have sponsored our 25th anniversary celebration, my little cupcake here and all that stuff. That is not any special. That's a regular cupcake. There's no THC at all or any sort of product in this particular cupcake. But the 420 specials all sort of broke down a system. Wendy came on this week. We talked about it, but I'm very, very appreciative. They helped us put together the documentary. It is out now. I'm snippeting it, but you can go watch it. Lots of people have reached back to me with beautiful words, tears, cheers, beers, questions, answers. Hey, I didn't know that. All of that kind of cool stuff. But all of that happened to me. Curio sent me to the ballpark Thursday, and they just had extra tickets. And like I said, okay. And next thing you know, Chris Pica, who's a ghost, is melting in the fifth row under his own sunscreen. Greg Landry, the executive producer of No One Listens, Everyone Hears, the documentary, was with me. I don't know a bigger Oriole fan than Greg. I've learned a lot about Greg doing this movie. Greg played baseball at UMBC. He was an outfielder, like a Division I baseball player. And I'm like, that's a pretty good baseball player, Division I baseball player. So that's another part of Greg Landry's little. I said, I should do a documentary on you, dude. So he went to the ballpark with us. And then I dragged Brian Poole, my seventh grade Dundalk via overly legal friend, and a good man and big Oriole fan with his Angry Bird shirt on. And we slathered up 50. And Luke, I'm going to tell you, we hazed Juan Soto. We razzed Aaron Judge. We annihilated Anthony Rizzo. We were on the on-deck circle, and I've told Wendy, and I'll tell anybody, Curio, well, anybody with seats down there, if they don't give me my press pass back soon, I'm going to make a full-time job of sitting behind the visitor's dugout and just becoming the next Robin Ficker. Because we had a really, really good time. And I'll tell you this, when I went to check in, Luke, when I went to check in on my phone, like I took a picture of the four of us. You probably saw it on the Facebook or out on the Insta world or out in the interwebs. And when I went to check in, the first place that popped up was Yankee Stadium South with 158 check-ins. As sort of a little bit of a four square joke, I guess, at Camden Yards. But I checked in at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. Kyle Bradish checked in for 4 2/3. The bullpen checked in. You checked in. I checked in. And I had a really good day at Oriole Park at Camden Yards on Thursday. And kisses to everyone out there that said really nice things to me and yelled at me and took pictures and goofed off and offered to buy me free beer. I am appreciative. Had a good time, dude. And it's a hell of a baseball team to watch, Luke. It really is. You're seeing it every night.
It is. And as I said to you earlier this week, it's nothing new. I mean, I went back and looked since July 1st of 2 years ago. There's 60 games over 500. I mean, this is no longer the rebuilding team that's turned the corner. This isn't even the upstart that surprised the baseball world last year. They're just a really good baseball team. And as I wrote at BaltimorePositive.com, I'm going to continue to say it. There are no big series in late April or late May other than they're one of 162 or one of how many series you play. I'm not sure how many statements really exist in early May when we're roughly 30 games into the baseball season. But if they do exist, the Orioles certainly made one this week. And I think if nothing else, this was a reminder to the Yankees who finished, what was it? I mean, 19 games behind the Orioles last year, whatever it was off the top of my head, and to the rest of the American League East, that the Orioles are the team to beat in this division. And that's not to say the Yankees are going anywhere. That's not to say we should be dismissing the rest of the AL East, despite the fact that they're not off to the same start as the Orioles or the Yankees. But I think what we saw this week was, first of all, really good four games overall. I mean, each of these games, other than Thursday's finale, the losing team brought the tying run to the plate in the eighth inning or later. But the Orioles got the best of the Yankees, and they take 3 out of 4. And the team that was in first place for most of the month of April is now looking up at the Orioles, albeit only by a game, going into this weekend series in Cincinnati. So a good week of baseball. It didn't go perfectly, and we'll get to Grayson Rodriguez in a moment, but you said it. The story on Thursday to me was clearly the return of Kyle Bradish. And 4 2/3, you just look at the box score, you'd say, okay, well, he didn't get through 5 innings. One, he was on a pitch count. And two, understanding where he's been over the last 2.5 months, 3 months, he looked like Kyle Bradish. The fastball velocity held firm. He threw his secondary pitches effectively. He held the Yankees to 1 run over 4 2/3 innings and on 84 pitches, because his last rehab start was at, I think, 77. So he wasn't going to go all the way up to 100, but that looked like Kyle Bradish.
But
And
by
now
the
it's just a
way,
matter of
also,
fingers crossed.
it was 100 degrees. You know, it was really, really hot. I can tell you as a guy who was sitting down off the dugout, right? Behind the Yankees dugout. It also, the McCann thing cost him 15 pitches early on, but it was almost like situational pitching. Like, it's like, all right, Kyle, you're working the rookie mound down in Sarasota trying to get worked out. It's hot as hell. It's getting humid out. Let's situationally put the Yankees in, put a couple of guys on, you know, and I mean, he worked out of it. And then the Orioles, of course, loaded the bases and couldn't squeeze, you know. Mateo, I mean, when McCann is playing, it's when the sort of the B squad's there. You're bringing the pitcher back. They're going to figure Means out this weekend. I have never, and I went with my three dudes who are Oriole historians. Like, when you start mentioning Chico Simone to Chris Pica, or you mention Jim Dwyer to Greg Landry, or you mention, you know, Kiko Garcia to Brian Poole, the guys I'm with, these are legitimate dudes. These are OG Oriole people. And we were having a crab cake and a beer at Fadley, same as you and me, except they didn't recognize me. I came in my Oriole jersey. Like, I ordered food and they're like, "Oh, Nestor, huh?" I'm like, yeah, it's cool. I'm just here having a beer. They're like, "We don't recognize you when you're not like doing radio." And I'm like, "Okay, well, I'm here. I'm just hanging." So we were talking ball. And like, and I know, look, the place isn't packed. We'll talk about that. It was Yankee fans everywhere. And the vibe down by the dugout, dude, it was 85% Yankee fans behind the dugout. Like the seats where I was. And I heard Spanish being spoken in every direction. There were Spanish hecklers, Puerto Rican dude that was like really into it, having a good time. But it was boisterous behind the door. I mean, there was no problem with me heckling. I wasn't like, but it was crazy. And it was baseball and it was fever pitch. I mean, what a situation for Bradish to come back into, as opposed to, let's ease Jackson Holliday in at Fenway Park. I mean, there's no off days for this team, right? Every game, every inning, every situation, every base is loaded, because the Yankees are going to have footsteps. And as much as I've pee-peed on Toronto and somebody's going to take a run at them, you've scared me with the Tampa Bay start, comparing them to the 84 Tigers and all of that stuff. Like, you know, I'm not a rear view mirror guy, but like, there'll be footsteps before the year's over, and there's going to be problems. And the Grayson Rodriguez thing is problem one. I mean, it's like whack-a-mole, dude. We get Bradish back and Rodriguez. What, you know, it's, but this kind of conversation went on with me and my boys for the minute I picked them up at 10:45 in the morning until we melted our asses off. And I dropped them off in Lock Raven at, I don't know, 4:30, because the games get over kind of quick. But I mean, I had a great baseball day just talking baseball and hearing baseball around me all day. But I've never seen anything like this team. And I mean that. I mean, I don't look, man, my track record stands for what it is. I don't know what this team's capable of, the potential, what Rubenstein's going to do. And the number one question for me everywhere I go is, you getting your press pass back? I swear to God, that I hear that more than I hear any other question. And I don't know, but like, the question, I have no question as to whether this team's going to be good, because this is fun baseball. And if you love baseball, but this is a recruitment tool for the people who aren't coming because it's fun. It's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, it's been a lot of fun for a while now. I mean, this isn't something brand new. I'm not surprised that the Orioles are 20-11. I mean, let me just put it that way. Like, that doesn't mean that they're going to continue quite at this pace, at the exact winning percentage they are right
If
now,
I
but.
had told you Bradish wasn't going to pitch, like, go through the bad side things, right? Bradish wasn't going to pitch. Holiday was going to come up and fail. They still wouldn't have a closer. I mean, I'm just giving you the, all the Achilles heels of the team or whatever the disappointments, without telling you about Cows or without telling you about Westbrook, without making the case for how Kramer stepped up. And they haven't had a whole lot of really bad starts, right? But they've also had a lot go wrong. Bradish and Rodriguez, it's Derby Day, and Bradish and Rodriguez have both missed starts, and they're 20-11.
Well, Grayson Rodriguez hasn't missed a start yet, but I
Okay, fair
understand your
enough.
point. But
Fair enough.
they've also had a lot of things go well, though. I mean, look, this is baseball. I mean, the Yankees haven't had a pitch thrown by the reigning Cy Young Award winner at the top of their rotation, so that's just part of it. But they're really good. They lead the league in home runs. Yeah. The bats actually had cooled off. What, they hadn't scored in 15 innings before they finally broke out, well, on Thursday afternoon. But your point's well taken, and I think if nothing else. And we'll get to Grayson Rodriguez, but with Bradish coming back, because I want to stick with him, because he was their best pitcher last year. I mean, he was their best starting pitcher. He was their ace. He was their game one starter. And obviously they have Burns now, but Bradish, if he's healthy and right, and you're knocking on wood and you're crossing your fingers and you're saying prayers that he wakes up on Friday morning and feels good, and he feels good after his bullpen, and he feels good after his next start, there's going to be that for a while. I mean, Brandon Hyde kind of said tongue in cheek that you kind of feel that way about everyone in baseball these days, with the state of elbow injuries, and in Grayson Rodriguez's case, some shoulder inflammation. I mean, it's just, these guys are throwing hard and they're throwing it with ridiculous spin and break and movement. I mean, it's wild. Go look at the Yankees back end of the bullpen and the way Holmes was throwing the ball the other night, and you see the ridiculous, insane break he gets one way or the other, on pitches that look exactly the same out of the hand. So, but there's a consequence to that, and guys get hurt, and we're seeing that. But for the Orioles, they've got a lot of depth. The lineup depth is, Thursday wasn't the best example of this, although they got contributions. But on any given night, you feel really good about 1 through 8 in the lineup at the very least. We can talk about Arias, when he's out there, or whoever it might be,
Dude,
McCann.
Ryan
But
McKenna was getting
they're
pissed on in the first inning by fans around me, right? Because I'm hearing all of this, and it really was an earful to hear this man behind me who had watched baseball a long time and didn't know much. Just if I rattled off the things that were being said around me, it was almost sort of like, you should listen to Luke and I a little more. You should come to Baltimore Positive a little bit more often, or probably 30 years ago, to learn a little bit more. But I am amazed at the pushing of the right buttons part of this, that Buck was great at that. The Ryan Flaherty's getting the big hits, and every night there's a different star, and all of that, Tea Gardens, and names of Oriole past, right? But this sort of is the same thing, where people can question whoever is at the end of it. They're not questioning anything about Henderson or Rutschman or whatever, but around the edges of the lineup, McCann's got to play some days, right? I mean, you have to give guys, you're one of the guys big time for, hey man, Mullins, 125, 130 games, all of these guys. We have enough players and enough depth to let every, let you're gonna bring Kerstedt up, let him bat, let him play. And I have no fear of any of that. And I also think that they're so analytical, so nerdy, and I don't know this because I'm not in there to ask them questions, and I wish I were, because I'd learn things. That their matchups make all the sense in the world to them. This isn't, oh, it's this day, we got to do this. They're 3 steps ahead, which is why they're 20-11, right?
Yeah, and I mean, going back to what you just said, I mean, look, fans have a right to chirp a little bit about Ryan McKenna because he's not that good. He was, look, Thursday stung the ball when they left the bases loaded in the second inning. He smacked that ball. It's just right at the left fielder, and then next time up, hits a home run to center field. But Ryan McKenna's not that good. But you also have to understand how a roster works, and we talked about this a little bit with Heston Kjerstad since he's been recalled, how he's played. since his first night in Anaheim, where he did get the start, he started once. You know, he got a hit on Wednesday night, but he hasn't played. And we kind of explain why. He's not strong defensively. He's left-handed, and they already have left-handed bats. Ryan O'Hearn is essentially blocking Heston Kerstad. And look, Ryan O'Hearn's been really good. Are you going to sit here and say you want him to sit on the bench? So there's some of that. So what that means is you have someone like Ryan McKenna, who basically the new Ryan McKenna before he got hurt was Austin Hayes, you know, in terms of how hot Colton Cowser was, although Colton Cowser's come back to earth certainly a little bit here of late, which is fine. He was always going to. But, you know, you need role players on your bench who, let's face it, are not going to put up big numbers. But I'll continue to say it, and you, as you cited it, there is no one in this lineup other than Gunnar Henderson, who for me is an absolute, as long as Gunnar's feeling good and you don't feel like he's banged up and needs a day, or he's under the weather and needs a day, he's the only guy I'm saying 100% I'm fine with him playing every single day. He's the only guy that at the end of the year, if you tell me he's playing 162, I say, that's fine. I mean, it's one of the best players in baseball at this point. You know, a guy who looks like he's going to be an MVP, strong MVP candidate at this stage of the game. So, but beyond that, everyone else in that lineup can benefit from some days off here and there. And Gunnar can sit, you know, every once in a while, even, you know, I mean, that's, you know, if he only plays 158 games, I'm okay with that. But everyone else, you know, you can play matchups. You can give guys some rest. You can look at the numbers and say, okay, this guy might be a good fit, not just because it's a right-handed pitcher or a left-handed pitcher on the mound, but his profile, his assortment of pitches, this guy actually hits the breaking ball low and away better. And that's something that this guy tries to live off of. So, you know, you go through all those different things. But the point is, and Brandon Hyde would be the first one to tell you this, you can push all the buttons, but you've got to have the players to do it. And I think you look at this team, you know, Jorge Mateo hits a home run on Thursday, and he's looked better with the bat so far this year, albeit playing on a more limited basis than last year, because I think that's his best fit. I think he's meant to be more of a reserve outfield or a reserve infielder who will face a little bit of left-handed pitching from time to time. And he's played some pretty good defense at second base overall. So that's fine. And he's a speed guy for you off the bench a lot of nights, and he can do that for you as well. So you need bench players who have defined skill sets and defined roles, and I'm not going to sit here and say that I expect nor think that Ryan McKenna should be on the roster all year long, but I can understand why he's on the roster right now. And that's because the role that Austin Hayes was giving them, which was a right-handed bat coming off the bench more because he was struggling and Cowser was looking, you know, like the better player. You know, McKenna was the better fit for that than Heston Kerstad, who doesn't give you that same skill set, you know, late inning defensive replacement speed, et cetera. So, you know, they've got a really good roster, especially on the position player side. I mean, it's so good. And on the pitching side, for as much as there's some questions in a big picture sense now, I mean, Bradish coming back, but is he going to stay back? Is he going to stay healthy? Is he going to, the elbow going to continue to be okay? And is he going to hold his velocity the way that he did on Thursday? I mean, he averaged 95 throughout that start, you know, was even touching on 97 a couple times and threw his slider effectively in the way that we saw him throw it last year. So it's still going to be a collective holding of breath for a while for Kyle Bradish. Let's put it that way. I'm not going to say the rest of his career if he avoids Tommy John surgery and continues to pitch, but it's going to be a while. But as we saw with Grayson Rodriguez this week, even when you have someone that you don't have any concerns with, you're not concerned until suddenly you are, right? I mean, a guy wakes up and his shoulder's a little more sore than normal, you know, the normal soreness from a start. And now, you know, we'll see how that plays out. And that doesn't mean that he's done or that he's out long-term, but he's at least out for the next couple of weeks. And you want to make sure that structurally the shoulder's okay. So they're running through tests, and at the very least, he's going to get a couple of weeks off here. But you know, in the meantime, how does Bradish look? So far, so good. He looked like Kyle Bradish on Thursday and John Means making his debut in Cincinnati on Saturday. So, you know, there's also the trickle down effect. Albert Suarez now moves to the bullpen. You and I have talked about him. You like the arm. You like the velocity. How's it look in a bullpen role, whether it's a two inning role like Jacob Webb gave them the other night in a very improbable save and striking out Aaron Judge and going through the Yankees' heart of the order. Or maybe Albert Suarez 2 months from now, we're talking about him being an eighth inning guy that occasionally closes games for them. Or he's off the roster. Who knows? I mean, it's a long season, and that's where I'll continue to go back to not trying to make too much of this four-game set, but we know it's 10 games against the Yankees rather than 19 of the past. So that alone tells you that there's a little more meaning to each of these games. So James McCann said it best. You know, you always get good perspective from the backup catcher. I mean, I'm backup catcher and sometimes the backup quarterback in NFL locker rooms, but he said it. Look, it's a lot of games to go. We've got 130 games to go. We don't want to make too much out of something in late April or early May. At the same time, we sure as heck don't want to be in the third week of September looking back and saying, man, if we had just gotten one more game against the Yankees or gotten one more game against this team or one more game against that team, because it all matters. Because if you're not winning the division, you're vying for a wild card. And so you know that going up against other teams, that can have some increased meaning as well. But he said, we don't want to look back and say, boy, we should have done that in April, or we should have done that in May. We should have won that series at the end of April. So from that standpoint, it was a really productive, fruitful week, and I think a great way to end the stand, considering on Monday morning, the amount of panic over Craig Kimbrell and the bullpen and losing 2 out of 3 to the Athletics because, hey, they're Oakland, and they stink, and they're moving to Sacramento, and they're awful. Meanwhile, there are a couple teams in that division worse than them right now, but it's baseball. And that's where always important to pump the brakes a little bit when we're talking about this stage of the season, whether it's a team that's struggling, whether it's a team that looks great. And here's your perspective. And that's why I'm not saying this at all to be dismissive. This was a really good series and a nice early season statement from the Orioles. But if it were last year and the Orioles were 20-11, they'd be 5 games behind where the Tampa Bay Rays were at this time last year. So it just speaks to, you don't know what's going to happen. The Rays looked like they were going to run away with it. Even as late as early July, I think the Orioles were 6 games out, not even to the All-Star break, and 6 games out already. And they were in first place, I think, what, 2.5, 3 weeks later. So, you know, it's still early, but you're spot on in assessing this team and saying, yeah, they've got some questions here and there. Not everything's gone perfectly, but there is just so much to like. And I think what's so exciting is there's a higher ceiling there for them to continue to try to strive for and reach with the pitching, with Jackson Holliday coming back at some point, with a guy like a Heston Kjerstad, with someone like Kobe Mayo, who continues to tear the cover off at Norfolk. So there are other names that will be in the mix at some point in time, whether it's this year or next year. But in the meantime, this is already a really good baseball team, and it's playing out that way as they're 20-11 through basically the first fifth of the season. We see they're playing close to 667 ball, and you've got to love that.
Luke Jones is here. He was there. I was there. We was there at Oriole Park in Camden Yards on Thursday. The Birds away all weekend, taking on the Cincinnati Reds. A couple observations. We just ease through this week and talk about the Yankees and stuff. I mean, they had their closer have an arm problem. They have their number two starter have an arm problem. They had their number one starter get beaten around a little bit. They come out of this smelling like roses. I would think that the one thing that I would say psychologically that changes for me when I put an Oriole jersey on and I go down there with my buddies and sweat my ass off and sit down in the lower bowl and see how good the team is, see that the place is far, far, far from empty or filling up at one on a 90-degree day. The Yankees are in town. It was 80% Yankee fans where I was. I would say it was probably 40% Yankees fans in the stadium, like in the overall scheme of things that were at the game. But there's a different thing. And all three of the guys with me, Pika included, we had a conversation about how unpleasant it was to be an Oriole fan forever and ever, amen. And I'm married to a Red Sox fan, right? Like during any of those eras where you would go down there and there literally would be 35,000 Red Sox fans in the ballpark and there'd be 8,000 Oriole fans in the ballpark and they'd be giving something away that the Red Sox fans don't even want. and the Miguel Tejada shirt or something, fans not wanting to go to a Yankee game, right? You know what I mean? I don't want to go down there when I'll go to a game, but I'm not going down there when there's 25,000 douchebags rooting for the Yankees and my team has no chance to win. This is, I guess, my point. Four of us get in the car, we go down, park the car, go to Fadley's, eat our crab cakes, drink our beer. Oriole fans, Yankees fans, not a lot of fans, not a lot of traffic, easy to get in. By the way, I had an A-lot parking pass. Had a little QR
Nice.
code on it. I pulled in, nice man waved to me, had my name on it. It was beautiful. I said to the guys, I haven't been in the A-lot parking pass. I told the Rick Vaughn story where Rick sent me out to BC back in the 90s. We still fight about that. By the way, shout out to Jim Henneman. In the 25th anniversary documentary, because Vaughn came in this weekend for the Henneman thing, in the 25th anniversary documentary, there is a piece that I noticed way into the editing piece, way after I knew Henneman in the press box name and all that stuff. I hope to take a picture of the press pass in front of the Jim Henneman press box because Jim and I were colleagues forever. I love Jim. His picture is in the documentary because I had the headline story for the paper on it was the front of the paper headline about the changing of the Skipjacks coaches or something, Terry Murray and Brian Murray, but he had his picture there. So Jim Henneman. So nonetheless, we pull into the lot and we're there. And we go in, we sit down, and there's Yankees fans, and they're fun, boisterous. I mean, I'm in the expensive seat, so nobody's really a jack wagon too much. I mean, beers are $15. It's not a place to be a jack wagon too much. But I just would say this: the level of banter amongst the fans, and more than the competitive fun part of it, the part for me in an Oriole jersey and the three people with me. Is we went down to the ballpark expecting them to win. We expect them to play 650 ball this year. We expect that they're going to be in the playoffs. We sort of know that they're a better team than the Yankees. You've pointed that out every day this week, right? So have they on the field. But we're like, no. And I've said to my wife, I'm like, they're the best team in baseball. Like I said to my wife, like, they're really good. They're better than they've ever, ever, ever been. And I'm trying to express that after 21 years of our marriage where they've just been so turdly awful. And she's watch the Red Sox win championships, right? That this is one of those periods or runs, and I shouldn't say one of those, because I've been around this waiting 40 years. We haven't had a whole lot of this. I mean, the 97 Orioles went out and beat people every night. You sort of knew they were going to. 96 Orioles weren't that way. The 14 Orioles, there was a level of confidence that you were going to go out and, you were the better team most nights, every night. 83, 79, you can make some cases in 80, 81. Nobody remembers that ish except me. You don't. I'm old enough that I remember being on the bus every night and going out there and trying to beat Jim Rice and Fred Lynn and figuring that all out. By the way, I'm trying to get Fred Lynn on the show because I just loved Fred Lynn. But the expectation to win, and that's not Ness and Greg and Brian and Pica going down wearing jerseys or anybody in the stands or the fun Puerto Rican dude who was yelling and yelling in Spanish to all the play, like he's wearing his Yankee stuff and whatever, but he knows we're really good. You know what I mean? He was only heckling Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman because he wasn't worried about Ryan McCann. He's a baseball fan, and baseball fans know when you have MVPs, Cy Youngs, you won 101 games. This is not a fluke. It's not a fake. It's not anything. But I'm just saying, psychologically, they go to the ballpark expecting to win every day, and they've all played on bad teams. Some of them in this jersey, right? But there's an expectation to win that we've always had with the Ravens. We've had that since Billick, since Ray Lewis. There's never been a day where losing has ever been acceptable for the Ravens, ever. And losing got real comfortable around here for the baseball team. And this expectation part is just so unique. As a fan, as a human, as a guy that's loved this forever, is a guy that built the place. If you go watch the documentary, you'll see I sort of love baseball first, and invested in baseball and invested in sports and loving it and wanting this to be what it would be a lot more often than it's been. I mean, I'm a baseball fan. I understand you lose, you win, there's ups, there's downs, but the malfeasance and the what happened here for 30 years, this is why I fought for all of this, is like it's possible. It needs to be well run. It needs to be well managed. It needs to be updated. It needs to be all of that. but it is it's a pleasure. It just is. I just need to say that out loud. A day after I spend a day of my life when I could have been doing anything, and in previous years I was. You know, I thought of going to every business. I lived two blocks away for 20 years, and some it was always about the weather and like who they're playing and do I have other things to do. I made time on Thursday, right? This is they're worth making time for because you expect them to win.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't have it. You know, we've been talking about this for a while now. And I think what you're saying and how it applies to people will continue to show up from an attendance standpoint. I've said this to you and, you know, we've talked about this for years. I mean, even going back to the best years of the Duquette Buck era and talking about attendance. You're not going to have the years and decades of damage that was done to any brand, quite frankly, and then it turns around and it just comes back. It's not a light switch. It's a dial. And I think what you're starting to see, and attendance is doing better at this point in the year than it was last year, certainly way better than it was 2 years ago. And, you know, that doesn't mean it happens overnight. And again, we've talked about this. Are they ever going to get back to a point where there's 3.7 million people coming to the ballpark on an annual basis? Probably not. But that doesn't mean it can't be three. It can't be just under three, which would still be market improvement from where it's been for a long time. So
it can't mean that they couldn't get 40,000 on a 90-degree day against the Yankees when they're really good, when you could plan to go, you know what I mean? Like, so the Yankees to
yeah,
me,
I mean,
this was the lost opportunity. And I'm thinking as an entrepreneur, look, and anyone that knows that Marty Conway, any of these people be here would say, look, you really want to focus on your weekends. You really want to focus on your giveaways, you know, and your promotions, and then fill in the blanks when the Brewers are in town on a Wednesday, you know, try to do something, giveaway night, dollar dogs, beers, whatever, you know, whatever, cow night, whatever, splash zone, milk the cow. I have cold cows or milk cows with Chick-fil-A out there, you know what I mean? And with Cal Ripken, I'm just making it funny now, but I get all of that. I was just thought, the Yankees with good weather with this team and beating the Yankees asses. And we got in the car, we were all like talking ish on the way down there, you know, how Bradish was going to go 7-3, you know, like he might've gone 6 and McCann didn't dip gloves. But I guess this energy that goes on in my life and my circle and your life and being a baseball nerd and being there, like, and I have all baseball nerds, but I did have an extra ticket on Wednesday night. And I did go through my Rolodex to say, who do I want to reach to invite to the game? And I went through my Facebook and whatever. And there's just a lot of people that wouldn't want to go to a baseball game that I in my life ever, no matter what, or people that just would have something else to do or whatever. And I understand all of that. But this is the recruitment level of I would hope that if they win a World Series and Mr. Rubenstein and Mr. Ripken do the right thing, including giving me my press credential back, amongst a billion other right things, getting television right, getting digital right, reaching to young people, reaching to – I mean, it's still so lily white. I'm never going to give that up. I mean, it's a thing for white people. It really is. I mean, mainly. And it needs to be more than that in a city of color. It needs to be more than just you and me. It needs to be more than the people that collected baseball cards for 35 years because we're not going anywhere, and we're there, and we stayed when it – was a dumpster fire for three decades of my life. And they did torturous, awful, sadistic things in regard to me and my business and in regard to all sorts of people I knew. So you talk about the damage being done to the brand, and I agree wholeheartedly. I'm wondering, first things first, team's great. You know, I don't know if it's priced right. I said to Brian, it was fifth inning. You want another beer? The first round was $50 for three, right? Do we want another beer? Or do we not? Do we want to wait? You know, like there comes, they make me make decisions there about money I make at concerts. We all make them at movie theaters, wherever we are, at bars and restaurants, and saying, where's the value? This is a Marty Conway. Where's the value proposition for me to come back? I sat in really expensive seats that I did not pay for, that I would not have paid for. It was a $700 day maybe we had at the ballpark for the four of us, you know, and we didn't even eat hot dogs and do all of that crap. We went to Fadley's, you know, had nice crap. I mean, we made a day of it with four good guys and guys I like and all that. But like, Would I do it again? Would I do it again in 92 degrees? Would I have preferred to have been up in the shade? But I'm not going to complain to the folks that gave me beautiful seats. I went and sat in them, but I had to get up and get out of there. And people were melting. Older folks. I mean, it was hot. It was uncomfortable. And you spent 700. So like I'm just giving the weight of being there versus not being there very fairly. It's not Mr. Auntie Angelos anymore or any of that. It's just more like I'm not shocked there are only 23,000 people there and 15,000 of them are Yankee. I'm not me. To be 8,000 or 9,000 Yankee fans, because that's pretty much what it was. But I would hope that that's not acceptable. I would hope that 2 years from now, if they've won 101 games again and they played in the World Series and maybe won one, maybe lost one, whatever, they've signed a Henderson and a Rutschman, and like all of that being equal, this series with this weather against the Yankees 2 years from now. There's a measurement for me to say, all right, I'm okay with where they are, whatever. I'm okay with them locking me. No, I'm really not, but I'm okay with them reviewing, I'm okay with them reviewing everything, including their television network, including, like all of that and how we, but I'm reviewing them. I went down and reviewed them, and I'm giving honest opinions about all of it, about the parking wasn't great, getting in and out, ingress, egress, like all of that, like, stadium needs updating. I mean, that's pretty obvious. They're about to dump $600 million into it when you're there and you're feeling things. When you've been to the new ballpark in Arlington and smelled newer and shinier and all that. But I am so heartened that this has happened and that they're good and that they're trying to recruit people in a good way with these players that seem like decent people. That's my report card on it. I don't know. We're a month into it. And to your point, they're 20-11, and you're not shocked. You expect them to win. I'm not shocked. I expect them to win. But I didn't expect Rodriguez to be hurt and Bradish to be this and then, and Holiday to fail and, the things that have gone wrong. But they got a couple of days now coming up where they'll have some rest on Monday, Thursday, come back. And they smell like a championship caliber team, that they're of that quality. And man, I've never gotten three buddies in the car and gone down there and watched him beat the Yankees' ass and lived it up. I mean, come on. I mean, it's a pretty cool day on Thursday, I thought.
Yeah, and I'll disagree slightly. I mean, I thought the attendance was, from where it's been, where it is now, and again, and your point is wanting to see more in down the line when presumably they continue to be good. Maybe they get to a World Series. Maybe they win a World Series at some point in the next few years. But 27,000 on a Thursday afternoon, pre-summer vacation for kids. I mean, I don't think that's relative to where they've been. I didn't think that was that bad. I thought it was a nice atmosphere. I mean, I think the big albatross from an aesthetic standpoint is the left field upper deck, where they're not opening it up most nights, and it just makes the place look emptier than it actually is on a lot of nights. But I thought
Dude,
it
nothing
was a
would
fun
warm my
series. I
soul
think.
more than them doing away with the Free the Bird seats, eliminating as a symbolic cleansing.
Well, and we've and look, right. But in all seriousness, we've talked about this. I mean, when you look at where ballparks and where stadia, where it's all going, I mean, it's trending towards lower capacity. Now, that's not going to help with some of the issues you just mentioned in terms of price points and costs and all of that. And look, that's not a Baltimore exclusive thing. That's anywhere. I
Well, I'm
mean,
not
literally
bitching about
anywhere
it.
you
That's how
go.
you afford Adley Rutschman, and that's literally how it gets paid for. And my point is, there better be more of us coming with wallets open
Sure,
more than my
sure.
wallet could ever be open or would ever be open in regard to what I could afford, what I'm willing to afford. And I love them, and they've treated me like garbage for 20. So how much more am I going to do in regard to doing, and how much more are they going to do of getting people who aren't there and drinking $15 beers? I mean, I don't know what else to say, because that's what's going to fund it. And I keep going back to that.
And that's fair. I don't disagree with you. I mean, it's that, and again, every team, every venue that hosts concerts, wherever, whether you're talking big cities, talking about outskirts, talking about suburbs, talking about areas that are kind of the boonies, they're all trying to figure that out. Meanwhile, you have ticket fees and all that stuff that goes on top of everything. But I think the point that you're making was overall, from a baseball entertainment standpoint on Thursday, saw a heck of a product,
It's
and you saw
never
a
been
good win, and
better.
you
It's
saw
never been better. You know what I mean? Literally, it's like going to see an artist, going to, see Adele and saying, never been better. Never been better than it is, value-wise.
I mean, I think for where the Orioles are now, when you consider not just their record right now, because that's such a limited view, but even looking at the 20,000-foot view, the 20,000-foot outlook, with how young they are, with how good they already are, with the guys that are on the way, with new ownership, with spending potential, whatever that ultimately ends up looking like. Hey, we'll see what David Rubenstein and the new group's willing to do on that front. I mean, you would be hard pressed to find a better set of variables. I mean, you have to go back to the Orioles' glory days. I mean, the late 60s into the well into the 70s, where, they had all that, but it was a different sport then. I mean, it was a different sport structurally speaking. It was a different sport in how it's played. Certainly the financial realities. I mean, Baltimore struggled to sell out World Series games in the 60s, in the early 70s. So, I mean, it's there's always been some of those questions at work, but all of that being said, I mean, this is exciting with where they are right now and where it can go and how it can grow and the upside that is there. Are they going to become the Dodgers? No. I mean, that they're not going to have a $300 million role, but I'm not going to beyond saying that extreme, I'm not going to sit here and try to cap it too much beyond, saying kind of the stating the obvious there. So let's see what it looks like. Let's see how much more attendance grows. Let's see if they can make a deep October run this fall. Let's see if they can get to a World Series in the next 3 years. Let's see if they can win a World Series in the next 3 years. And then we'll see what that looks like. And we saw what it looked like for the Ravens for a very, very long time, and still does, even if it's not at its peak attendance-wise and excitement-wise. No, that might have been, I don't know, 10 years ago, whatever date you want to throw out there for that. But, this idea of success and sustained success, and for the longest time, you wore an Orioles cap just because that's how you were raised, or you're from Baltimore, and that's just how it was. And people, some years, would look at that with sympathy. You'd look at you like, wow, man, you must be a diehard. And now I think you're starting to see that swing. And let's face it, for the better part of the last 30 years, there've only been a handful of years where that pride has been there. And there was always, okay, how long is it going to last? Whether we're talking about Buck Showalter, Dan Duquette, how good can it be under the Angelos family, all of that. There are no limits now at this point, realistically speaking. Again, payroll, we'll see. We're going to see what that looks like. David Rubenstein, you're up. Mike Elias, you're up in terms of keeping this young talent. So, but I just think in a broader sense, I think it's really exciting for this city, for Orioles fans who have stuck with this team, or the fans who gave up, not because they just wanted to root for another team, but because they were just that frustrated, that disgusted with it, or that apathetic about it. That pride is returning. And I think that's doesn't happen overnight. It's going to be a dial, as I said, not a light switch, but I just think the Orioles are just in such an exciting place, and have been now for a couple years going on. But you're really seeing something that is good and something that really feels sustainable, knowing that there's more meat on the bone, there's more upside that can be achieved here. And that's just, it's really, really exciting. Where for the longest time, even the Buck and Duquette era, that felt like an accident. That felt like, lightning just striking in the right place for 3 or 4 years. But this feels different. To your point, it's as good as the Orioles have been going back to their glory days. And I don't say that with being light or to be hasty anything. I think they're in a position where they are really good now, and they have a chance to be really good for a long time. And what more can you ask for to build a brand on than having that kind of winning baseball on a night-by-night basis?
All right, dude. Greg Landry's going to come on because he went to the game with me and he did the 25th anniversary video. So he can say whatever he needs to say about it. He owns Towson Transfers, and I didn't even know he was a baseball player. He had all this background. So he can speak to this, but I know you know Chris Pica. Pica literally had to get up and leave because I was having too much fun. And when you know the Yankee players can hear you, and it's all Yankee fans around you anyway. And I had a dude in front of me. It looked like Questlove. He had an Adam Jones jersey on. And he was with a dude, his buddy, who had an Aaron Judge jersey on. I put the picture up because it was such a juxtaposition. And so I started right away. I mean, we got in our seats first pitch, and Soto came up. I mean, and he's 12 feet away. And I just started in on, "I'm staring at you, staring at you, I'm staring you down." So we started in on this, and then the Hispanic guy started in Spanish, and like it was, so it got on. But my best heckles of the day for, well, Soto, obviously. And then he's had the thing in center field with the glare and the white and the Reggie Jackson and the move, and we're gonna step out of the box, and I'm yelling, "Get in the box, get in the box." So delay, I'm yelling at the umps. So Aaron Judge comes up to the plate. Somebody was on. It was somebody on third, maybe at the time, maybe. And I looked up on the scoreboard, and it went from 200 to 198. So I started a 198 chant as he walked into the batter's box, and we were ruthless. And that, the Rizzo was the best. I got on the ump. Judge took a low ball, a ball that was low, and I stood up and I screamed, "He's 7 feet tall. That's a strike!" So yeah, I had a
That's funny.
really good time. I was really having a good
Good.
time. So, but you have to ask Pike, because Pike like disappeared for a couple innings. Listen, Pike is a Birdland member, so he has the discounts and all that that he did not share with his friends, because he's Pika. And he went up on the club level, and he had a sandwich for $2 off, and did whatever he did. And he came back, and I had to get out of the sun. And I'm thinking, you're just embarrassed to be with someone that would look at Anthony Rizzo when he comes out of the box and says, "It was over your head. What are you swinging at?" Like, I literally, and Rizzo looked up at me as he walked, because they had to look at me. I was over the dugout. They had to look at me with shame. With New York across their front, which I had a really good time in New York the other day. Did I mention Nasty Nestor's my favorite pitcher? Luke Jones is here. He is Baltimore Luke. He is there. He will be watching Cincinnati this weekend, hopefully tailing off a little bit. We have a very much overworked Luke, and his sister's like all preggers and eating his favorite pizza. And I have to look at this on the internet. How far away from you are vacation? 8 weeks away? I mean, you earned a vacation the last 10 days here with draft this and Orioles that and Jackson Holiday this and Grayson Rodriguez that and Kyle Bradish this and Craig Kimbrell that. Take the weekend off. Go be Deacon Jones. Enjoy your family. Watch do you get the games in Pennsylvania? I need to ask that because that's always an important thing. Do you have access to the games?
Yeah,
Okay.
of course I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just making sure your cable provider provides that for you. I hear a lot of that too, man. I mean,
Yes.
we had four opinions in the car yesterday about how we get the games and how we don't get the games. And we're a bunch of old 55, 57, 58-year-old white guys. Just, well, I'm Hispanic. Don't really, Mr. Rubenstein. So anyway, I had a great time. It was fun. It's fun talking baseball again. Luke and I'll be talking baseball on the daily, on the regular, out in all the places we do it. LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. There'll be fun things. There might be some Black Crowes pictures over the weekend. There'll certainly be some Kentucky Derby things and maybe a mint julep recipe over the weekend. Great, great Preakness conversation coming on. Dick Girardi joined me. I owe him a cheesesteak. I may have to hand deliver that over the weekend. It's great. It's springtime around here, and I hope that everybody finds our 25th anniversary documentary informative, entertaining. My wife finally watched it because she's back from vacation as well. So I hope you'll watch it as well. And if you're out on social, you'll see little snippets of it coming and going. And Greg and I are going to have a longer conversation about it as well. I need to track down Mickey Coachella. I've never had Mike Brillhart on the show. Gina Shock has had some off the field issues where she's been taking care of family and friends. So I haven't had her on in a while. So I'll definitely circle back with her. But it's really been a nice endeavor to hear from so many folks who've followed us, supported us, had our backs in so many ways, still have our backs after all these years. So we are appreciative. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Come get a Pac-Man scratch off from us at Fadley's next Friday as we watch some baseball here all week.